We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Brady with the ball, throws, end zone, touchdown. That's Mike Vrabel on the receiving end. Brady looking to throw it, touchdown, Mike Vrabel.
Brady play action, fires, Vrabel catches it.
Mike Vrabel made a wide receiver release off the ball. It was fantastic.
Goal pass, and that's a touchdown. Mike Vrabel, he's done this before.
And a third pass will result in a touchdown. It's Mike Vrabel.
Brady to throw. Vrabel again. Touchdown again. This guy, you can truly say all he does is catch touchdowns.
Oh, Mike Vrabel is the coach on the other side today, but boy, do we know Mike Vrabel. Mike Vrabel in his NFL career, ladies and gentlemen, for those of you who do not know the exact numbers, Mike Vrabel has been targeted 14 times as a receiver. He has 10 catches for 14 yards, and all 10 of those catches have gone for touchdowns. We're into the third quarter here with NFL Sunday on the WEEI Sports Radio Network, WEEI.com, anytime, anywhere on the Odyssey app.
Wrong because he's eating into my boy Foye's touchdown. Did they ever put you at defensive end and say, go get you?
Talk this to tight ends about a DN catching touchdown right. passes, and no, here
this
we
is,
go.
This is you drafted two tight ends right. in the first round in
Sign
3 years.
Free agency.
Okay. And you had – no, these were my – I was getting my touchdowns. Like, right. never, nothing, my stuff is always – when you take Ben Watson off and when you put Dan Graham backside, like, what the hell? Like, whatever. My problem. I got mine. People That's say just. He took your tickets. No, he didn't. And I told him this the other day when he came on my show. Dude, you were never the first read. He likes to fight me on that.
He, okay. wasn't.
He was never
right.
the first read. You were always the third read.
Right.
Because they always – because I remember, like, well, listen, no chance he's getting it. And doggone it, sure right. enough, something would happen. And there the ball would go.
When he's running the inside crossing route in
the
Super Bowl
route,
and Brady throws it to him like 4 yards
it's
down
never
the field.
Been, it's never gone there,
no,
ever.
No,
ever. I will tell you this. Never. It's never gone to the underneath crosser. There's three
right.
routes front side.
Right.
Are you going to get me going now?
Chris, that's
it's like he can never get out. He's always late.
And that's ride 136 on the goal line.
Or 134.
Or 134 where Vrabel was the front side tight end
mm-hmm.
who had the underneath shallow cross. But the read was the corner route first. Right? The corner route, the flat route.
And then the backside.
Then the backside
dig.
In route.
Yep.
And then you went.
Then the backside.
Then you went to the backside. You went to the backside shallow cross. But that was late because your initial read off of the play action was everything right. And then that last thing, that was like the O-ish screen, but you didn't call it that way. If you threw it that way, you're like, what happened to the front side read? So I know exactly what Chris is talking
like,
about.
Unbelievable.
It really is amazing when you go through and you watch all these plays and you see that, you know, there was one corner route that Vrabel actually ran that he like flopped and kind of caught it in
yeah,
the corner of the end zone.
Was the, everything
was crossed.
He did have a nice, I will say this though, they threw him a corner route against the Rams 1 year.
And it's the one I'm thinking
yeah,
of.
It was a really nice catch. I remember going, damn, we're screwed. Because what we needed him to screw up.
Yeah, yeah.
We needed him to screw up, and he never did.
Right.
And I was like, well, this is not going away,
he
guys.
Was always probably.
And then next thing you know, Seymour's in the backfield.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, Dan Klecko's in the backfield. And then Tom Ash, they're the throwing touchdowns to Tom Ashworth.
Right.
I'm like, what the hell? Whatever.
How yeah. many do you think you got sharked?
Well, that's
like, how many realistically between Vrabel, Ashworth? I forgot about Dan Klecko lining up at fullback.
No, I would say for me, I was not. No, I was always in pole position.
Right,
I was always in pole position. I always sat right behind Brady. I said, listen, he was always giving me looks so much that he was throwing interceptions. He
right.
was forcing it, but no, it was always. And then there was one year where Dan caught, like, I guess 9 touchdown passes. It wasn't like he wasn't getting fed either.
Right.
But we were always in the goal line red area because we ran the ball so much. So play action with Corey Dillon or Antoine Smith was always in play.
And that's the only thing Vrabel was catching. If it was outside the 5-yard line, Vrabel went in there. Yeah.
Because it felt like with Wiggs, it was more of the – like Wiggs was more of the stick mover.
Well,
Third and four, here's your five-yard route.
We used to run like the nod, the jerk, the return route. Like that's where I kind of made my living in those elements. And then when you got down to the red zone, you were hoping – like once you got inside, I'd probably say about the 15-yard line – I used to love the jerk route, but sometimes my touchdowns were taken away because they would put Troy Brown in my position, and then Troy would run the little jerk, but you could go over the top, you know, if the safety split, and they would. But yeah, that's kind of, you know, that those were the routes that. And they still run them to this day. Returns, yeah. I mean, they still run them. Look at Hunter Henry. How many stick routes or seam routes do you see him catch? You know, that's.
Did you watch Alabama? I don't know if you saw how Alabama won the game yesterday, but they got down to the 2-point play, yep. And with that Mechie kid, they just ran a return route, one-on-one outside.
The outside return route.
He made the corner look silly in catching that.
That's the Edelman touchdown.
Seriously, you're right, Wiggs, and there you go. And it kind of started with you guys, but as much as we've had fun with Mike Vrabel catching all these touchdown passes, he's turned out to be a hell of a coach.
Damn good coach.
I want to ask you guys because you would know, right?
Yeah.
The transition from player to coach, some guys can do it, but Vrabel was actually a player who contributed in Super Bowls, caught touchdown passes, got big sacks. There have been guys who maybe played a year or two have made the transition. Vrabel was actually worth a damn as a player who has made the transition to being a coach. But what is it to you former pros that really jump out about the way Vrabel has made the transition?
I think a thing that Vrabel has done well, and I think it's similar to his path in the NFL, right? He kind of had to, like, make his bones because he started out in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. And then he had to make his bones there. But then he really made his bones in New England. And I think he was one of those guys that wasn't like a superstar, but he was a guy that was consistent. He was a guy that people respected. He was a guy that didn't take no crap. He was a guy that in the locker room, you looked at him and you go, you know what? This guy really means what he says. And I think a lot of those guys that have that, who've made that transition from players to coaches and have their own kind of personality, I think that's what made him. And the fact that if you look at a lot of that confidence and cockiness, he had that as a player. But a lot of he learned under Urban Meyer, because that's where he kind of learned that, you know, how to become a coach. So I don't really put him in the Belichick tree of coaches. I think he's learned a lot from Bill as a player, but his coaching style is more of the Urban Meyer tree.
Well, I would say that I think the thing that he's been able to do, which I think is really difficult to do, is I think the players on the team have taken on the personality of their head coach.
Right.
Like their sarcasm, their willingness to, you know, accepting a challenge. Like it's an extension of him. Like the way they respond to him, the way he, you know, motivates them, the way he encourages them. I think that's, to me, because in the pros I think it's really hard to do because everybody's getting paid. In college it's a little bit more important because they're not getting paid and they're young and you have to somehow convince them that this is cool. Like, you know, this is important to you. And like half the guys aren't playing, you know. So I think that to me has been the most, you know, important part of his, I guess, road to becoming a head coach is how when you see him talk, you know, he's obviously really bright. He's really clever. And then there's no bull crap. Like the guys on his team believe him. There's none of this, oh, here we go again type of crap. You know?
Did you hear A.J. Brown talking about Vrabel 2 weeks ago
on
the whole, hey, when this guy, like, I believe him.
Yeah.
And A.J. Brown talked about the relationship he has developed with Vrabel as one of the more important ones in his life.
I think that's important. I just don't think that you can, you know, when you're 29 and 30, you can't fool me. Like, I know if you're authentic or not. I know if you're full of crap or not. And to me, that'll tune me out to you quicker than anything. Like, and I have tons of examples of coaches like Joe Gibbs. I always give Joe Gibbs example because from an outsider looking, I thought Joe Gibbs was like this revered, unbelievably smart, articulate, just thoughtful coach. One freaking meeting, I was like, this guy doesn't have a clue.
Right.
Like, he doesn't have a clue.
And a lot of people
know that. I was
35
years old, and I was like, no, uh-uh. If I know he's full of crap, like, I know in 90% of this room feels like he's full of crap.
Right, and what's crazy about that is you would think, like, when you think of, like, some of the greatest coaches in history, you know, Joe Gibbs is a name that will be thrown out there from somebody,
yep.
Right?
Not impressed.
And most people
at all.
But see, that's the thing. You're fortunate to be behind the wall and be in those rooms to really go, okay, is this guy really good, or what is it, or is it more about the players? And I think the thing with Vrabel that makes him such a great coach, or at least is that you got to be a guy that has to have thick skin to play for Vrabel. You know, that's how he was as a player. Like, you know, you bust your balls, you know, and so you'd have to have thick skin as a player to play for Vrabel. And you know that, okay, and that's why I always respected Belichick, and I played for Parcells and respected him, because it was no, like, BS. It was no blowing smoke. Like, if Belichick said, hey, if you don't cut the backside, I'll never forget playing against Grant Winstrom against the Rams here at Foxborough. And I missed the backside cutoff on ride 35, but he was in like a 7 technique, you know, damn near in the gap. So imagine how difficult it is to cut a guy off that way. It's damn near impossible. And Belichick said to me in practice, like, the next day, God damn it. You know, God damn it, Wiggy. If you can't cut the backside of ride 35 off, I'm going to cut your ass. And when he said that, you believed it because you've seen him do that before.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, okay, no matter what I do, I don't care if I got to grab the guy by the back of the ankles. I'm not letting him, you know, I'm going to do what I have to do on the backside. But you believed him as a coach, and that's, I think, what guys look at Vrabel. When Vrabel says something, they buy into it.
Since you guys didn't have a chance to hear it, here's what A.J. Brown said 2 weeks ago about his relationship with Titans coach Mike Vrabel.
You know, sometimes I know this is a business, and sometimes you don't want to get emotionally attached or tied with someone. Man, I appreciate him so much. People like that, I think, no matter however this business may go, I think forever I'll be a friend of his and he'll be a friend of mine.
You know what? You know why that's important? Because I remember when I was so sick of being lied to and strung along my 7 years in Seattle, the first thing I said to the coaches there, I was like, please, if you just listen. Just be brutally honest with me.
Right.
Just that's all I want. I get it. I'm a grown man. I can identify. I know what's going on, and I'm smart enough. Like, just be brutally honest with me, and we'll never have any issues. But if you lie to me, if you string me along, I'm going to hate your guts, and you'll never get anything out of me.
And then you get into radio.
Yeah, then you get into radio, and then someone says, hey, before the red light goes, remember, don't trust anybody.
But that's how it is, though. I mean, it's crazy to believe and see that. That's how it is. And I know you, Christian, which is interesting, your first 7, 8 years were out in Seattle. Like, my first introduction into the NFL my rookie year was with Parcells. Talk about a guy who gave it to you straight, raw, no chaser.
Yeah.
And so my, like, I learned the NFL and how it was a business from jump. And I learned, like, this is how a guy like Parcells operates. There's no sugarcoating nothing. I'll never forget, he said to me, he goes, you'll never be a starter in this league. You're too small. You ain't fast enough. And you'll not start. He said, but what you can do is find a niche. And he pointed out Larry Wiggum. I don't know if you remember Larry Wiggum.
Oh, yes.
He was a special teams player.
Larry Wiggum once celebrated a block punt in Philadelphia where the ball went back to Philadelphia. And that's one of the moments of Wiggum's career. He was another Wiggy for a period of time. People
really?
Used to call Wig. Yeah, but anyway, go ahead.
He was a special team. He was like Izzo, Slater, yep. Before those guys, right? That's all he did, and he was good at it. And I'll never forget, he goes, you need to be like Larry Wiggum. Find a niche. Find something you're good at. You can't block nobody. You're too small. You're not fast enough. What do? You can catch and get open. Make us have to say, we can't cut this guy because he can do that better than anybody else.
And, by the way, motivating you at the same time and telling you you're not fast enough, you're never going to start and all that. So it was both.
It was the reality, like Christian said. It was no BS, you know? And you know, I remember seeing him back in – I remember playing for Minnesota, and we played Dallas, and he was coaching Dallas at the time, and he was the head coach. And I was like, hey, you know, I'd never be a starter. And at that point in my career, I was starting. But it was that honesty that made me go, I respect this guy, and you know what? Here's what I have to do. And that's kind of how I was able to. And that was, like, right at the beginning. So I know you said you went through years and years and years trying to figure out all these liars, you know.
But I do think with Mike Vrabel, there is that other side of him, right? Now, there's the talk of maybe as a player you knew this guy could be a coach. And then he went to go with Urban Meyer, learn to coach the youngs, figure out what it's like to deal with 19-year-olds. It makes it easier when you get into the pro game, in my opinion. And you see with Vrabel this growth and the he wants to do more, wants to do more. That's why I wanted to bring up this guy as a potential replacement for Bill Belichick, because if what's the next step for Mike Vrabel? Yes, it's to win a Super Bowl as a coach. But in terms of the career arc for him, it would be to run an organization.
See, but here's the thing. So going back to the genesis of this Mike Vrabel thing. So when he was the first time that I noticed was when he was recruiting for Ohio State. He never lost a recruit. He never lost one.
Right.
So obviously he had the gift. You know, the young kids, 16, 17, believed him. So it translates. So what's next for him? Well, he's got a really good partnership right now with Jamie Robinson, who used to be here.
John Robinson.
He used to be here. So that connection, like, why change it?
Right.
So do you want – I know a lot of these coaches, they feel like the next step is to have that title. I have, like, you
complete
know –
complete control.
I have,
McDaniels
like, you know,
wouldn't even take the Denver job without it.
Yeah, and
that
I'm
was
like,
10
well,
years ago.
I mean, like, I've been on teams where the guys have had it. They all screwed up. They all end up giving it up because they can't manage both. Like, they can't coach the team. Something somehow gets lost in the job description. So the thing for me with him, I think he already kind of has that.
Right.
He has that with John Robinson.
And
they're a good relationship.
Yeah.
You don't think they do?
I don't think he has the final say, and that's what everybody wants. Because that's really what it comes down to is you can have the good working relationship, but who breaks the tie?
Yeah, but
ain't Vrabel right now.
But do you think if
true.
Maybe
it's the owner.
But do you think if Mike Vrabel goes, I want this guy, that John Robinson and them go, all right, we're going to get him.
Power
him.
I believe they do.
I think they do, though.
Say, listen,
I think he has enough.
But if they're on the draft board and it's, I want this guy,
I think Vrabel has enough power and enough of a relationship with the GM there where the GM knows, like, all right, this guy would be a good fit for you as I think they work well together.
I agree.
Because the GM knows, okay, here's what Mike's looking for. And it's the same. The problem you run into is when the GM and the coach are on different pages. I want an offensive guy. He wants a defensive guy.
What would be the next step? So, because it's not like college. Like, a lateral move is – any team is a lateral move.
You have to run it, right? To run a team in the NFL.
But
I mean,
how many
that's
guys,
the next layer.
How many guys really – do that?
Well, what they do is
truly do it.
Well, but it's being able to bring in the power
right
structure.
Of a first refusal, Gruden, or whatever it is.
Gruden is the perfect example.
Yeah.
He went and hired Mayock, but if there's a decision that was going to be made, Mayock's going to be heard, but it's Gruden's to make it.
But
the
don't
end
you
of
think?
The day.
Don't you think that Vrabel and John Robinson are tied together, where Vrabel can go, this is what I want, and Robinson go, no. Hey, if we don't get him the guy, this could affect me.
Well, eventually, a lot of those relationships, I think, in the NFL, you don't see them last a decade just because absolute power corrupts all. And there's always that tug of the, boy, I'd love to have this guy. I wish I could hire that guy. I wish John didn't like this guy. You know what I mean?
There's right, I know. I see what you're saying.
And when you look at, like, Urban Meyer, right? Urban Meyer, legendary coach. Kind of dicey handing over an organization to that guy.
Does he have final say?
He has final say. It's complete control.
Over
his head.
But if you give Mike Vrabel that power, he comes in with a completely different purview. And when you think about of all the head coaches right now in the league, right? Mm-hmm. If you think about guys who could do that job, and for you, I'm glad you mentioned the recruiting piece of it, because it's being a, that's how you recruit free agents in the NFL. Yes, the money matters, but it's the, hey, I'm the head coach, it's cachet. Bill Belichick, cachet out the yin-yang, as they would say in Seinfeld. Kind of the same thing with Vrabel. I just look at, there are some coaches that I know, like Cliff Kingsbury, is never going to run the Arizona Cardinals. That's not his deal. To me, he's really just an offensive coach.
But does he want that, though?
I think Vrabel would want, I think Vrabel would want the challenge. Imagine taking that challenge here, like not going to Jacksonville to rebuild them to prove that he can be a personnel guy as well. Don't you think that twisted part of Vrabel would love to take over here?
I don't know if it's here, but I like the power aspect of it. I think there's something to, okay, I know we have a great relationship, but and I will still let you do your job, but in the end, it means something for me to say, no, I think this is better.
Right now, Mike Vrabel can't pick up the phone and get the owner of the team on the phone and say, I want to do this without clearing it with John Robinson.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
And to me, that's – and but, so can, by the way, so can freaking Urban Meyer down in Jacksonville.
But I think Vrabel, knowing the success that he's having right now, how much of that does he want, knowing that – with great responsibility, potentially could lead to great failure.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So now where he goes, if there's something I really want, I could pick up the phone and call John Robinson and most likely
and
get it done.
And hope I get it, right.
But I think he feels like I most likely could get that done. Does he – like, I almost look at this – like I look at NFL teams like the Mob, right? And I almost look at where Vrabel, he might not be – the Don, but he has so much power as a capo that him and the he could easily say, hey, this is what I want done, and the guy go, I agree with you because I'm on the same page, knowing that he doesn't have to deal with as much of the responsibilities is maybe the word I'm looking for, that you have to be now if, you know, you're controlling everything. That's what I wonder. How many guys really want complete control, knowing that they're going to have to deal with everything and still coach and be a good coach?
I find this fascinating in part because Vrabel's name has not come up here, but if we were to think of, if you were to draw up a perfect candidate, how is Vrabel not the perfect candidate?
Easily.
And that's easily. The and but that's how what many I keep guys, coming like, back to.
But here's another question that, I mean, and answer me this. How many guys are successful and leave one organization to go to another, like and still like that, no, without getting fired? See, that's the issue. Like, Vrabel's not going to get fired. So how many guys have you seen throughout NFL history that were successful and go, you know what, time for me to go, because you said it's a lateral movement, right? Now I'm going to go from this organization to this organization because I might have complete control.
Well, guys have done it before.
Like who?
Well, Holmgren left Green Bay. Yep. And went to Seattle. Yep.
Did he get fired from Green Bay?
No, he left, but they gave him complete control.
Yeah. Okay.
To the point where he screwed it up. Eventually, he couldn't do both.
Okay.
They took it away from him, and they put somebody else. And then
he wasn't coaching, though.
He was showing up like at 1 o'clock for practice.
Right.
No one ever saw him.
But you think about that.
Mike Sherman, another guy, they gave it to him. He had total control. They took it away from him. There's more examples of guys.
Where was Sherman coaching?
He was in Seattle, then he went to Green Bay. And I was somewhere down in the Cape somewhere.
And Cowher got it in Pittsburgh and then lost it towards the end.
He
has never come back. But Gruden would be the other guy who.
Yeah, but Gruden wasn't coaching, though.
No, but, well, he did. He had that sabbatical on Monday
Night
Football.
Mike Holmgren's the only guy that I can think of that Christian brings up that was currently coaching and went from one team he was currently coaching to another.
To a good team with a good quarterback, and he left. That was crazy.
And I would dare say that if they offered Vrabel $8 million to do Monday Night Football, he might consider it. That's just a hunch on my part. You never know. It's a lot of money. $8 million?
You don't think he's,
would you
he's
do it make, for half?
But you don't think he's going to be making that? Don't you think he's making that?
Well, oh, did you see
I'm
how
sure,
much
but,
so the
show
salaries
up on,
came out?
Yeah,
did you see what the salary? I think Bill was like at
He was at a projected, I think
like
it was like 20. But he's also running the organization.
Well, don't you think Vrabel's
well?
Probably making about 7-8?
Yeah, 7-8. Yeah. But to wake up on Thursday and go, I can start my work week. You know, there is a little bit of that as well. I know we lose Fourier for about a half an hour. He's got to go be a TV star. Patriots inactives. Who will be out for the Patriots today? We'll get to that. Here's Scheim. He's ready to trend on NFL Sunday.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
So it is time for the inactives. The inactives are coming out for the 1 o'clock games, and it is all brought to you by the Ketches Law Group with offices across New England. Ketches Law Group has won over $1 billion for their injured clients since 1986. At Ketches, you pay nothing unless they win. Injured, get a free legal evaluation at KetchesLaw.com or call 508-321-7000. So what we do know in terms of this Patriots-Titans game is that there is no Derrick Henry, there is no Julio Jones, and there is no A.J. Brown. And, Wiggs, as we wait to get the rest of the sort of inactives for this game, there was at least the chance that A.J. Brown was going to be able to play in this one. Mm-hmm. And without him, it feels like lots of running backs, lots of tight ends. And here are your Patriots inactives, and it is very underwhelming. Ronnie Perkins, linebacker, who is now on the Ramondre Stevenson layaway plan.
Okay.
Like, we thought Stevenson was going to be that guy who they were going to shelve. It feels like it's Ronnie Perkins. J.J. Taylor is inactive. So is Jarrett Stidham, who you forget is even on the roster.
I completely forgot about that, too.
Tight end Devin Asiasi.
My boy.
And Yasir Durant. So, Wiggs, Patriots are kind of healthy for this game.
Yeah, I mean, it's all you. When you look at the Patriots, it's all hands on deck. Everybody's going, and then when you look at, and you flip it and you look at Tennessee, that's why you got to ask yourself. I know Vrabel's a great coach and he's done a lot of tremendous things, but does he have enough talent to win this game?
No,
and I just don't think that he has. Especially when you look at how the team's built. I mean, they weren't built around their quarterback, anyways. They were built with their running game. And when you lose the best running back probably in the NFL, when you're talking about just the ability to run in between the tackles and Derrick Henry, and you take that out of the equation, and then your best offensive player, A.J. Brown, and your passing game, and you take him out of the equation, the tight ends are not very, you know, productive there.
It's not Jonnu Smith down there.
And right. And Jonnu Smith, he wasn't even really that productive in that system. He caught, what, 50 balls or 40 balls or something like that? Mm-hmm. So he was a good player. But you look at what this team is, that's why I think it's got to be a failed position game. If you're Mike Vrabel, it's got to be no mistakes and try to see if you can get the young kid, the rookie, or a turnover, a fumble, something to create your opportunity to win the football game if you're Tennessee because of the field position you can create.
And Wiggs, in talking to Lawrence Guy, who joins Gresham Keith every Patriots Monday at 11:30.
Who's balling out.
He is. And one of the things that he talked to us about was, hey, man, everybody looks at the first drive, and if you're on the outside, you're like, oh, my God, what in the world's going on? Whereas with them, it's the, okay, here's what they hit us with.
Right.
Here's where we tighten it up. Here's where we do our thing. And the last three games, it has really worked gangbusters. But I wonder if the layer for kind of Vrabel is, I got one layer, right? Meaning that I know I got a first 15 that I think I can score with. And defensively, I got this, this, and this. And then once all that's gone, I just have to hope my team plays better.
Well, you see, I understand the point, and when Lawrence Guy says that, I understand what he's saying. It's like, you know, in a boxer, you got to feel that guy out, right? Mm-hmm. So he might hit you with a couple good shots early in the first round. See, the thing the Patriots have been able to do good is that even though defensively they've been hit with those shots on those first drives, they've been able to match those drives offensively and go down and score points, so make it almost like a 0-0 game. So if you're a Tennessee, you're saying, all right, hey, New England has shown that they can give up that first drive. But now if we can show that when they get the ball on offense, mm-hmm. we can stop them, now that gives you a little bit more of room to operate with, because you didn't give up a first drive to now go, all right, we scored seven, but now they came back and scored seven. So that, I think, is going to be the thing that Tennessee and Vrabel's got to be telling his guys. Hey, this first drive, we can put some things together. Boom. Our first 15 were scripted. Maybe we go down there and we score. But the more important thing is going to be when they get the ball back to stop them and put us in a position where now it's like, all right, gives us a little bit of a cushion.
Wiggs, the biggest name on the Titans inactive list is, well, there's guard Nate Davis, but inside linebacker Rashawn Evans. And I know that he hasn't played in a couple of weeks, but if you're Tennessee, I mean, you just pile them up. We've talked about running backs, wide receivers, and now you can't get a guy like Rashawn Evans, who, when he's right, is an impact player. That's a guy who's a big part of your run defense. Corner Greg Maben is out. Running back Jeremy McNichols and Tier Tart, a defensive tackle. I have never heard of that guy before. Nope. And there's a guy with a really confusing name to announce, an outside linebacker, but no Rashawn Evans as well. You know, this is starting to feel like, it's kind of feeling like when the Patriots are catching Cleveland at the right time.
Right.
COVID issues dinged up. It feels like the same thing here with the Titans. Patriots are catching them at the right time.
Oh, you're in a perfect position if you're the New England Patriots. And not only are you catching Tennessee at the right time, but you take it one step further, you're catching the number one seed at the right time.
No question, Wiggs.
And so that means you can open the door up for yourself tremendously. If you win today's game, you instantly put yourself, well, let me see, I think that
I got it right here. Oh, so if the Patriots beat the Titans, they would temporarily be the number one seed.
Right.
Until we found out the result of the Browns-Ravens game, because the Ravens could be 8-3.
Right.
But to your point, you're either number one or number two either way
right.
come tomorrow morning.
And then you know, oh, next week when we play Monday night, we play the Buffalo Bills. So mm-hmm. now we can even put ourselves in even more of a position to distance ourselves with that 1-2 seed. Now all we have to do is continue to win and watch Baltimore. And I heard you guys talking about this on your show, and I completely agree. And I looked at it. Baltimore has, out of their, I want to say, six remaining games that they have left.
Yep.
Five of them are against winning football teams. So Baltimore doesn't have an easy road. Tennessee has the easiest road when you look at just winning teams that they play. Mm-hmm. They only play two of them. But you can knock Tennessee out today. You win today, you have knocked them out from that number one seed and put yourself in a great position. And now you really do control your own destiny, because you got to look at, if you look at the Baltimore Ravens schedule, there's definitely another one or two losses on their schedule based on who they play.
I got it right here, Wiggs. You want to walk through it real quick?
Yeah.
It's tonight against the Browns. That's at home.
Right.
Then on December 5th, they're at Pittsburgh.
That's a tough one.
The next weekend, they're at Cleveland.
Right.
Then home for Green Bay.
That's a tough
Ooh.
One.
Then it's a day after Christmas at Cincinnati. Then they're home for the Rams and home for the Steelers.
Think about that.
They're losing two more along the way.
Every game that they have remaining on their schedule is against teams that have winning records.
Yep.
So if you're New England, now I know people say, oh, you don't look at the schedules and you don't look at the scoreboards. That's what they say. That's the politically correct thing to say. But you know how it is. You got to be looking at and go, hey, if we can win today's game, we now put ourselves in a position where we can control the number one seed. Right. And then and every guy does it. It's just mm-hmm. it's just, you know, human nature to kind of look ahead, but you can't focus ahead. You are in a perfect position. And think about this. This New England Patriots team today wins this football game. You control the number one seed.
It is
my
true.
Opinion.
No, it is true. Here's the Tennessee schedule after today for the Titans.
Yep.
So they play the Patriots and then it's the bye. And then they get Jacksonville at Pittsburgh.
Winning record.
Then Thursday night game, Wiggs, short week in front of Christmas, hosting San Francisco.
And you never know what kind of San Francisco team you're getting.
I love that you said that because you're right. You don't know what you're getting.
I think they're 5-5, but you never know what kind of team you're going to get.
And what will the physical shape of the Titans be as well in terms of the skill players?
Well, you could already pencil pencil A.J. Brown out of today in Jacksonville and Pittsburgh?
Yeah. Well, it would be today, and then I think the bye week
counts as a week. Okay.
However, we know that regardless, you're talking about maybe getting him back for the Frisco game. Now, the last two for Tennessee are a little like New England. It's Miami and Houston for Tennessee, whereas the Patriots have Jacksonville and Miami.
Right.
So, really, I guess now that we look at it, if it is New England and Tennessee, Miami could be the team that could be the one that might throw a little monkey wrench into things at the end of the year.
Well, if you look at it, though, Tennessee, they have the easiest path.
No question.
Right? They have the easiest path to get there because even if you look at New England, they got Tennessee, the Bills, the Colts, and then the Bills again. When you looked at, we just looked at the Tennessee schedule, said their path is easy.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can beat them, now that instantly takes them out of the picture because of the head-to-head.
Have you checked Kansas City's sneaky little schedule here after
bye? No, I haven't checked them.
It is against the Broncos.
Right.
They get the Raiders.
Okay.
Short week at the L.A. Chargers Thursday night.
Two good games right there.
Then they host Pittsburgh.
Another good game.
At Cincinnati, at good Denver.
That's
not the easiest. Now, they can win those games, but that ain't the easiest schedule.
Well, that's why when you look at where, to me, Tennessee is more important of a win than, let's say, if you lose next week to Buffalo. Because all you have to do is split with Buffalo and beat Tennessee, and you still control the number one seed destiny.
Yep.
You still control that. And then you have a better record than the Colts, and then you play them. So if you can beat the Colts. But to me, the most important thing is the Tennessee game because just based on their schedule and you look at the teams that they play, if you lose to Tennessee today, you could pretty much – eliminate that number one seed.
Right. It's even amazing that we're sitting here with a chance to talk about the number one seed to begin with. A, because of, the Patriots have maybe played above expectations, but the AFC, some of those teams that got off the hot starts, like you look at where the Raiders were at 5-2, where they're an afterthought now. I'm not saying that Cincinnati is necessarily an afterthought, but they were the number one seed at one point. Now they're out of the playoff structure. Really, the AFC, it felt like teams got off to a hot start, and then they kind of leveled off pretty quick.
And the other thing that you look at with this new playoff format, you damn sure don't want to be the seventh or the sixth seed because now you're on the road, right? And if you can somehow get yourself to the second seed and maybe, the one seed loses, but that's why this is – winning today – puts Tennessee behind you.
Yes.
Right? And then Buffalo, you have two games, and you got to say, okay, we got to split with them. And then if you factor in your record, because I think if you look at Buffalo's conference record, you got a way better record. I think they have four losses in the conference.
Correct. Buffalo. That's where Kansas City has an issue, too, conference losses.
So you're in a really good position where if you split with the Bills, you still, when those other tiebreakers come in, you put yourself in good position. The Colts game, I think conference as well, and record-wise, the Colts game is going to come down to head-to-head, but then you might have some other tiebreakers after that. But today, win, because I think that you should be able to beat the Colts even though they've been playing well.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, and there's some stuff to examine there as well, not only with the Colts, but also the Buffalo Bills have suffered a big injury as well. Wiggy and I will continue to talk about the ever-changing landscape of the AFC. We will go around the NFL at the top of the hour. We've also got your BetQL Patriots betting update at 12:30 when we do Degeneration Bets. Getting you ready for the Patriots and the Titans right here at Gillette Stadium. This is NFL Sunday.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.